Welcome to Shazam, the podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete. I'm your host, Kayla Drescher. On this week's episode, I could really use a hand. Or six. Thank goodness our guest has a few to spare, and it begins in 3, 2, 1. Had a good week and a good start to your new year. First couple days in January. Did you make a New Year's resolution? I did not make a New Year's resolution because why? But I did make some general goals that are like, what should I try to accomplish in this amount of time? And that's not in 2021 necessarily. So some of those are pertaining to career. Some of them are just, I want to do a routine that I haven't tried before. Bowie, I don't know if you heard him, but he told us his New Year's resolution, which was just to sleep more, get some good naps in. So he just laid down in order to accomplish that. So that's good news. Good job, Bowie, for accomplishing your goals so far. Was rude, Bowie. Okay. He's a little sassy when he's sleepy. He got some new toys, and so he's pretty worn out from playing with them. Anyway, exciting news for today. We have a new Shazam executive producer. Thank you so much to Suzanne Eggel for supporting the podcast. Really appreciate that. And per the executive producer title, you also receive Bowie's advice. So Bowie, what advice do you have for Suzanne? Well, that's good advice, Bowie. Per his new goal of napping, he has a really good piece of advice for getting in some good naps, which is, if I translated this correctly, he said, your bed is your bed if you sleep there. Same is with your lunch. Bowie, does that mean you sleep in your lunch or whatever you eat is your lunch? Got it. That makes a lot more sense. Okay. Well, hope you got something pretty great out of that brilliant piece of advice, Suzanne. Thank you so much again for your amazing support. And if you'd like to receive advice from Bowie, plus bonus content, behind-the-scenes fun, exclusive swag, and the coveted Bowie's podcast, check out our Patreon. The link is below in the showy Bowie notes. And now on with the show. Ever since our guest won the German Grand Prix 2011 and was thus the first woman to achieve the prestigious title German Champion of Magic, Alana is considered a star among magicians. But success did not come overnight. Born and raised in Hamburg, Germany, Alana took her first steps on stage on her 5th birthday. As the daughter of famous illusionists, the little girl experienced the world of show business at a very early age. Alana assisted her father until she gained enough confidence to perform her first piece of magic at the age of 13. Only 3 years later, Alana enchanted her audience with longer stage performances and close-up magic miracles. Due to numerous appearances in variety theaters at trade fairs, corporate and private events, and on cruise ships, her performance reflects a unique spontaneity and versatility together with female charm and elegance. Very soon, Alana started working on her first original act, all about shoes. Diamonds shine, pearls appear, and high heels materialize from nowhere. Alana's enchanting words take the audience into a wonderful world of magical, fashionable surprises. One spectator even experiences his very personal deja shoe. In 2008, Alana won 3rd place at the German Championship of Magic, followed by contracts in England, Spain, and the United States of America. In 2009, Alana presented her own 20-minute show at the Magic Castle in Hollywood. In the same year, she was invited to play All About Shoes at the World Magic Seminar in Las Vegas in front of the convention's patrons, Siegfried and Roy. Alana decided to create a new act to excite her audiences of laymen and magic experts alike. In these stressful times, who doesn't dream about having several hands? I do. An appealing idea for the young artist who magished her master degree in media and communication studies simultaneously to her magic career, Alana's act In Her Hands makes those dreams come true. Reams of hands chase, tease, and play with their mistress and make her favorite jewelry vanish and reappear until she turns completely headless. The Grand Prix award in Germany was followed only a few days later by the Russian Grand Prix of Magic in 2011 at the White Magic Convention, one of the most important international competitions. This award led Alana to the famous French TV show Le Plus Grand Cabaret du Monde. I just shouldn't pretend that I know how to speak French. In the beginning of 2012, the Magic Circle awarded her as the Magician of the Year in Germany. With this success, Alana made her final breakthrough into the top class of international magicians. Recently, she appeared on Penn & Teller's Fool Us, wowing the famous magician duo with her multiple hands, saying, "We've never seen an act like this before. You've changed magic for the future." Now, let's get to it. Please welcome Alana. Hi, Alana.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you so much.
Yay. I'm so excited. We took such a long time to make this happen, and it's 100% yes. worth it.
For weeks.
For everyone who wasn't a part of our Facebook conversation, it was like every time we'd go to record, one of us couldn't do it, which is great. It's part of the joy of entertainment.
It was entertaining. Definitely. It was. It was already entertaining.
That's amazing. Just so you know, you've been on my list to interview forever, but I had someone very specifically email and go, "Why hasn't Alana been on your podcast?"
Really?
Okay. And I was like, "Well, it's time to send an email, isn't it?" So I'm very excited you're here. This is great. I'm going to start with the basic annoying question you probably get all the time, which is, what was the beginning of your career in magic? How did you get into it?
So I kind of grew up in magic because my dad is a magician, and for a long time my mom was his assistant, so a very classical, magical couple, let's say. The first time I was on stage was on my 5th birthday. I didn't do a magic trick, I was just there with him. And well, then when I was a little bit older, like 10 or something, I started to come to his shows to assist him on a regular basis, all the weekends basically. And when I was maybe 12, I think I was 12, 13 maybe, I did my first trick in his show, which was a very short thing, but yeah, it was my first trick. And then a little bit later, I started to do a second one, and then it became more and more. So this was how I started in magic. For me, it was just a very normal thing. Like, you know, another kid has a parent and it's a teacher. And for me, it was just normal that my parents were magicians. So for me, it was normal going to shows, and it wasn't very exciting for me because I was just so used to it, which sounds bad now probably, but for me it was just everyday life.
Yeah. So what was the first trick you actually did?
The first trick I did, I don't know how it's called in English, but it's a trick with the silk and all the dots falling down.
Oh, yes.
You throw them up and, you know, and then yes. it's black or whatever, and then you throw some confetti up and then they come back. I don't know the name in English for it, to be honest, but that was my first trick.
I don't know it either. All I know is I also did that trick when I was a kid, but I always held it like my hand was broken because I couldn't figure out how to do it well, and it looked awful. I totally understand what you're talking about. That's
yeah,
so
it probably
cool.
looked awful when I did it, but you know, it was, yeah, it was my first trick, and I was very proud of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then were you very quick to go, "Well, obviously I'm going to go into magic as a career because this is what I'm just around," or would you kind of play with different things?
Well, when I was a kid, yes. When I was a kid, I was sure, like a lot of kids maybe want to do the same thing or the opposite, but sometimes the same thing as their parents do. So for me, it was, yeah, I'm going to be a magician. When I got a little bit older, like teenager, and when I started my studies later, I wasn't so sure about it anymore because I was interested in learning different things. But then when I did some internships during my studies, I saw that it's much more fun to be on stage and it's just a greater way to make money. And then even though I finished my studies, I was sure that I would be a magician again.
And what did you end up studying?
I have a master in media and communication studies.
Ah, great, 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 great. So did you ever actually study fashion, like officially?
I never studied fashion. No, I was always interested. This came from my grandma. She never worked with fashion, but she was just a very big fashion lover. And she gave me some magazines and later bought my own. And I was always very interested in that, but I never studied it. No.
So then how did you go from studying media and communications, loving fashion, all of this, into boom, magician, full-time professional.
Well, you know, I've been performing all the time. Like when I started with my dad, of course, when I was little. And then I started to do close-up when I was about 16, I think. Yeah, I was like 16. I did close-up magic and did my own close-up shows and also stage shows. And I did a first competition, maybe I was like 17 or 18, which was horrible. It had nothing to do with fashion. It was just basic tricks. My dad filled out the application for this contest. And he didn't even tell me before. I did this competition. It was horrible. I didn't win anything. It was just, and it was a bad experience because there were all these very experienced magicians from Germany and Austria who did great things, you know, original routines. And then I came there with some sponge bunnies, you know, so it was, but I didn't know better because before I never met any other magicians. I never did because I was always with my dad. We did our solo shows. And if we were together in other shows with other artists, it was not magicians. So I never met magicians before. And then I met them at this convention, you know, doing the contest. It was horrible, but I made some friends. This was the good thing. I met finally some other magicians. And then it started to become a hobby for me because magic was a job for me, a nice job. It was a job. It was not really a hobby for me before because I met some magicians who said, do your own stuff, do original things. You're going to have a lot of fun with it. And that's how the fashion thing started because I loved fashion. And then I started to do my first original little pieces, which were about fashion. And that's how it all came along. So only when I met like these magicians and became friends with Topaz, for example, a very, very good German magician, very original guy, clever, creative guy who helped me to go into this direction, in my own direction, let's say, or he helped me to find my own way, my own style, however you want to call it. And that's how I started with the whole fashion thing. And it was during my studies and I already made money with magic. And then I started to find my own style. So that's a short story, more or less short.
I love it. I want to get back into some of the other things you do outside of the In Her Hands act in a little bit. But obviously, everyone knows you for the Hands act. We have a question from Lauren Cohen. She wants to know, where do you normally find inspiration? As well as Katrina Crotch asked, what's your creation process when you are making an act like In Her Hands?
Mm-hmm. Well, usually my inspiration never comes from magic. Never. Because I'm so much into fashion that usually these kind of things inspire me. It might be a style. It might be a piece of garment. A special style of clothes. It might be shoes. I have a shoe act. And then I think, what could I do? Recently, there was a book. A friend of mine had a book. It was kind of like art where, how can I explain it? It was like photographs, but the pictures were cut out and they put like the lips on another point of the face, or they put the eyes, like one eye was on the forehead. You know, it looked very weird and it looks very fashionable. And this can inspire me. I was thinking, oh, it would be great if I could just take my lips, cover them with my hands, for example. And then I put my hand in front of my forehead and then my lips are on my forehead. You know, like these kind of ideas I get from magazines or fashion shows or just on the street, you know, like street style or whatever. And this is what I really like. Combination of fashion, art, magic. And then that's usually where I get my inspiration. I never think like I want to make something disappear. I don't work like this. I really need to see something that inspires me. And then I think about what can I do with it?
Yeah, I'm really similar in that regard. I think if your inspiration comes from magic, you're going to do the same thing that everybody else does.
Exactly.
As opposed to taking your mouth off and putting it on your head. Yeah, that's totally inspired by a Chicago card trick, isn't
it? Yeah, it's always nice to bring some other art form or whatever into magic so you can create something fresh. You can look for techniques, you know, like classical magic techniques, like, for example, my earring manipulation that I'm also doing in my hands act. A lot of those moves, it might be from coin magic, you know, not all of them. There are some techniques that we invented completely new, let's say, but some other techniques, you could do them with bigger coins too. So I take some techniques from magic, of course. This is very good to do that. But, you know, the objects or the ideas usually come from other fields.
So you're mentioning taking your lips off. How then do you go from that to going, I'm just going to sprout some hands? So that makes sense, right? That's an act I should do.
The process then, like,
yeah,
what
like how
to the idea.
Yeah,
I mean, it's trying, you know, it's just a lot of trying. For example, when I created the hands with Topaz together, we were just actually playing around. You know, I have this very old jacket that I didn't want to use anymore. So I cut it a little bit and tried, and I put some hooks on it that I don't use anymore. I thought I need some hooks for my hand changing, but I didn't need that anymore. So usually I go from simple to complicated back to simple, you know, that's usually how it works for me. In the middle, you make it too complicated. Usually there's an easier way in the end, but that's what I found out. So it's just a lot of trying. A lot of props that are my acts now, they were made of like some coat hangers that you get at the dry cleaners, you know, the ones that you can form.
Yeah.
Right? This is a very good tool. Like, you can make a lot of things out of these coat hangers.
Do you ever steal them from hotels? That's what I do.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. I've been so much in hotels and hotel rooms, and then I don't have them with me all the time. So honestly, there have been a lot of coat hangers, not even like those ones, the dry cleaner ones, but also some wooden coat hangers that we broke and we used for some stuff. I shouldn't tell them, and then they won't let me into a hotel again, probably.
It's fine. The amount of things I have taken from hotels is ridiculous. I funded not from a hotel, but from restaurants. I literally furnished my entire first apartment's kitchen with just silverware and plates I took from restaurants.
Yeah, so. I know. Some cutlery also can be very useful sometimes.
Right? Yeah, if you just put it in the room, it's obviously mine to do magic with. Have you ever had, I had this once where I was competing and I had my bar act and I had everything, the entire act fit in a small trash can.
All right.
And so the idea was that I put everything in my little trash can and then I went down, competed with the act, came up and then put it next to the television. And logically, that's a trash can. So it was emptied into the trash and I never saw the act again.
No way. Oh my God. Horrible.
I imagine, well, you're not keeping your hands in a trash can.
No, I don't. No, those, no. Those ones, they're really, I have to protect them because, you know, they also twice they broke and I'm very, very careful with it. Like before, I was already careful, but not careful enough, let's say. Actually, one finger broke at one time, like during my act, during the performance, like a ring finger just fell off I was doing the act. So it must have been loose a little bit before even, but I don't know. I didn't see that. And so I was just performing and then I saw my finger dropping. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And I think for the audience, they don't know the act. It was lay people. It was not magicians. So probably they thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
I think I just took the finger off the floor. And then somehow I took it and it was just back on my hand in a magical way. So I think for the audience it was quite great, but for me it was just very stressful.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you have to find a solution sometimes in some seconds. So after this experience, I was really way more careful.
Yeah. I don't want to ask you how you do the act, because obviously that's yours. But the hands, are they're genuinely that fragile?
Yeah, they are fragile. Wow. Yeah, they are.
I just imagine because you're like swinging them around.
I know. I just know how to handle them, let's say. But it took a lot of time to know how to do it.
Mm.
So usually it's funny because when there are some other magicians in the show and they're watching me from the wings, they're like, oh my God, how you handle them. It's so funny to see, you know, like if they see something from the side and they are like, oh, but that's really cool. Yeah, that was a lot of work, but a lot of fun too, of course. And, you know, it's like it was a process to get there.
Yeah, it's so, and I imagine you know this, but it's such an iconic act.
Yeah.
That it's like everyone knows it now. Because in the US, at least now, it's very different where a cabaret style act, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, that's not a thing here. You know, there are magicians that started with that a while ago and then kind of still make a living, but not in the US. It's really hard to book an 8-10 minute act and have success. Most clients want an hour, sometimes longer. So is that a big market in Germany and Europe, that style act?
I think it's a difference, yes. Because, well, first of all, in Germany, we do have variety theaters, like cabaret theaters, which is a big tradition in Germany. And I worked a lot of them, but it's not like I'm doing that all the time. Like I think people from other countries, if they know about variety theaters, they think like German magicians are working there all the time. It's not like that. But of course you can. And usually it's between like 2 months and 6 months you can work there. And they do look for acts like that, really like classical 8 minutes or 7 minutes, whatever, 9 minutes, whatever it is. Some of the variety theaters, they also look for two acts. So many times I did two acts, once or twice I did even three acts in a show with other kinds of artists like jugglers and contortionists and stuff. So this is a market. But also in Europe, let's say not only Germany, but Europe, we do have a lot of magic festivals, especially in Spain and France and also Italy, even more than Germany. We just have a lot of festivals, and it's not conventions, you know, it's not like magicians are watching it. It's just lay people, and they really do like magic. So with an act like mine, you can work. I did a lot of festivals, a lot. For the corporate side of our business, let's say, it also helped me, but almost never, like you say, they only want this act because this is too short. So this is the same thing for companies. I do this act, but before or after whatever, I do, let's say, like 20 minutes more. An hour is long. So usually for companies, I would do like maybe 20, 30 minutes altogether. But this act helped me because it was very popular and got a lot of clicks on YouTube. So it's selling. This act is selling, but still I have to do more when I do corporate shows. But it does help. And I don't always do it in a corporate show, but many times the people that book me, they want to see it because it's just so iconic. Even for lay people, this picture of the hands is so strong that they want to have it. And if they have it, I can do almost whatever I want around it because they're happy, you know, but they need more time. So that's these two different sides. You have the, let's say, festival variety theater kind of side and the corporate side, which is very different, but both markets together work quite well for me the past few years.
Yeah. Do you ever get, because I was also on Fool Us, and yeah. I get a good amount of work from that, which is awesome. But yeah. I get a lot of people asking, hey, can you do strolling magic or a close-up show, but can you also do that piece from Fool Us? It's like, oh, no, I can't. What? No. Do you ever get people are like, I want that iconic act. How do we work this into this?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people who don't know well so much about show business, they're like, oh, I want this act, but actually it's a close-up situation, you know? So honestly, then I just basically tell them, no, it's not possible because I need a distance. It's a stage act. It looks best with some distance to the audience. And usually they understand. They do understand. It was just in the beginning when I started working with my act, when it wasn't that famous yet, that I, maybe not mixing with a close-up act, but I would do almost any kind of show with it just to practice, you know, in front of an audience. So I performed my act in a quite small restaurant without a stage and people not surrounded maybe, but almost surrounded. And I didn't really care because even if they saw something, because it was difficult angles, I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to perform it and get experience with it. This was the most important thing. I didn't care so much, you know, about if it really looks great or not. And people were usually happy. But after some time, when let's say this wasn't necessary anymore, I stopped to do it because it's uncomfortable for me to do it. And I don't want to do that anymore. So usually fitting this act into a close-up situation or a very small room, I just say, no, I'm sorry. It's not good for your audience either because they won't have the same experience that you have when you saw it on a video and you want your clients or whatever to have a great experience. And then I recommend you this and that. So usually I can talk myself out of that like this.
Yeah.
Maybe you too. I don't know.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's just a lot of explaining why that's a terrible idea without saying it's a terrible idea. It's such a good idea. Here's the thing though. Yep. I love it. Negotiations are a joy. So I first saw In Her Hands on Cabaret du Monde because I was very obsessed with it for a whole year. That's all I did. Yeah. It's also not a very popular show here, but as magicians or performers, you are watching that being like, what? Oh my goodness. I've never actually asked someone their experience on that show. So how does one get on the show? What was your experience like? And then after the fact, did you get work? Was it helpful? All of it.
Well, honestly speaking, from all the TV shows I've done, this was my best experience. because they are so professional. They've been doing that show for like 20 years.
Yeah.
They've seen a lot of magic and other different kind of artists. So they just know what to do. They fly you in and you repeat, then you repeat once more. Then the next day in the morning, they tape your act like in full makeup and costume. So just in case something happens, but this you know from Fool Us, right?
Yeah.
Just in case something happens during the real TV show with a real audience, they can edit something in or out, whatever. So this was really great. And also what I really, really appreciated was their post-production. I have never had any other TV show that edited my act so well, because it is, for a lot of magic acts, it's really about the post-production also. Because you don't have this experience of sitting in a theater and you're just amazed by the light, by everything that's happening. So your focus is much stronger if you watch it on TV or on your computer. So for me, this was the best edit I've ever had. It was one of the first ones and still the best one. Because in the right moment, they didn't show anything, you know, or like in Fool Us, for example, what I didn't like so much, to be honest, is that they also edited out a lot of things, you know, like too early. It was almost like, oh, I didn't see how she changed the hands or how she's doing anything, because they edited so much out, like too much. And in the French TV show, it was just right. So this was a very good experience. And also at that time, it was the number one TV show for marketing yourself. You just have this great video and a lot of people who are interested in this kind of art, you know, magic and stuff, they watch it. So this was one of the most important things I did, this TV show. And I think Fool Us can do the same thing today. I think it can do the same thing for you. It's just a kind of a different thing because the cabaret is a cabaret show. So it's really good to do a cabaret act. But Fool Us, it's more modern, I would say, because, you know, you can do all these kind of things now, shorter things, you know, close-up things. You know, you can do everything now in magic. So I think for today, it's the thing to do. But yeah, the French TV show just opened a lot of doors for me, a lot. So I'm very glad I did it. I have to say they paid well too. I'm not going to say what, but they paid very well. So this was also nice side effect of it. So good experience. Yeah, I can't say anything negative about it.
That's awesome. That's great. It also, it seems, at least from when you're watching it as an audience, it seems like the most professional.
Yeah.
Professionally produced show. And every act, even if I don't like the act or think it's good, it looks great. They do such a good job.
And the audience is great. They are warmed up in a very nice way. And also, they're just used to doing a standing ovation. And, you know, it's just like the host of the show is always so happy about every act. And that was really a very warm feeling, you know, to be welcomed like that. And yeah, I absolutely loved it.
Besides the editing on Fool Us, how was your overall experience on that?
You know, I've been asked to do Fool Us for like 4 or 5 years. And I was always busy. I was always very, very busy. So I never could do it. And then like this time, it was the first time that I finally had the time to do it. I finished my theater contract. It was 4 months. It was exactly finished on February 29th. And I think on March the 2nd, I flew to Las Vegas to do Fool Us. So it was kind of stressful, but I could fit into the schedule. I thought it was very professional too, because it was the 7th season already. So I felt like, okay, everybody knows what he's doing there. This was kind of a good feeling. I liked the studio also. It's a theater, right? It's the real, but like, let's say the studio in this case. I liked it too. And, you know, I did my full act for Penn & Teller. You just see the hands, but they edited out the rest, like the earrings, let's say they edited out. So I did the full act. I just came out of my contract, so I didn't want to play another version, because this would have been very hard playing like once or twice the normal version and then just jumping into another version. So I played the full act, and when you really listen to what Penn said, you can hear that he watched the full version.
Yeah,
because he said something like, we just, I don't remember what he said, like, we saw an act here. And then I'm like, yeah, but all the audience all over the world just have seen the hands part now. So for me, it was not like an act. Really didn't feel like an act when I watched it. So I was like, well. And also the earrings have a lot to do with fashion. So, you know, this was a bit weird. And they were not sure if they would keep a little part of the earrings in, which I hoped for, but they didn't do it in the end. So for me, it looks like half of my act. Yeah. It's very weird for me to see this. But everybody was being very nice. I enjoyed doing this little introduction movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like what they do. This I really enjoyed to film. This was really cool. Yeah, everybody took great care. So it was a nice experience.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. My act got edited perfectly. Okay. But I only am doing one moment of magic. The rest of it is acting and story. So, you know, I look at every single YouTube comment. I don't know why. And most people will go, oh, the switch was here, the switch was here, the switch was here. And they're all wrong because switch was edited out. It doesn't exist. You can't see it.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean, because I perform this routine live all the time, it doesn't mean that the switch is bad, I think. Anyway, most people don't see it, but they just took it out. And I was like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't integral to the act.
I mean, this is good, you know, like I'm very scared always of the post-production because it can go like for you, it can go very well, but it can go like, nah, you know, so for a magic act, I think that's very, very important, you know, like you say, for you it was perfect at some other moments, you know, for me, it wasn't perfect on Fool Us, to be honest, it was really far from that. And especially if you do an act that you usually do in theaters or whatever, you know, like live situations. Mm. To do it on TV might be difficult, not for all, but for a lot of acts, it's a different thing, right? It's something different to create an act maybe just for Fool Us, you know, which I think is not better, not really better. There's a lot of acts that work, but it's nice to do it, you know, because, you know, it's only for TV, it's only 3 minutes and the people have a short attention span, but you can work on a full act, like a full 3 minute act kind of thing. So I think that's really cool with existing acts, variety acts. You have to really take care and speak a lot to the people before, to the people who work there, to at least try to have a little bit of influence over how it's going to look.
Yeah. Do you have different versions of this act? Because you mentioned that you just came off and you didn't want to do a different version. Do you have different amounts of time you can do with the same kind of act?
Yeah, well, not really, really. I mean, the act is not very long. It's like 6.5, 7 minutes. Depending on how long the applause is in the end.
Yeah.
No, you don't count that. No, but I do have a TV version where the earrings are still in, but this is almost 5 minutes still. And usually the people like 3 minutes, not more than 3 minutes now, because the attention span is shorter and they want shorter bits and pieces. So I don't have a short version like this. Usually then they edit something out. So I don't have a special version for that.
Gotcha.
Usually it worked with the 4 whatever minutes for me. So
great.
Far.
Have you ever done the earrings, just the earrings?
Yes. I mean, for TV or live or both?
I have done that.
Yeah.
Ah, cool. I love them so much.
Yeah, you know, I created the earrings first. I mean, now the hands are like the thing, you know, that people identify with me. But actually, the earrings were first. Because at that time, when I started to think about an act, like an act to music, because before I was only speaking, I was only doing parlor magic, only. Really only. I started to play with earrings because at that time I was wearing kind of big earrings. And then with topaz, I started to just play around with the earrings and find some techniques and some moves. And the first time I performed this act was really only the earrings. So this was just, I don't know, like 3 minutes, a little less, maybe 3 minutes in my dad's show. I tried it the first time. And it was very nice. And I thought, oh, that's it. I'm going to do jewelry. But then I thought I need something else. You know, I didn't want to have like only a jewelry act or something. And I always liked magic with body parts. I love Rudy Kuhn's legs always. I love Christopher Hart's hand.
It was so just such was a funny sentence.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we started to play around with hands. And we played around with legs too, in a different way than Rudy does, completely different way. But then we were like, no, the hands are better for me. Someone works better. And then I put these two things together. And then just after a little bit more time, the final piece of the head came because I need another ending than the earrings. So it was not like all at once. It took a year in total, like from the first version to the final version, let's say.
So on Fool Us, they literally just edited out a section in between because you close with the head. Right?
Yeah.
So they just took out the earrings?
Yeah, exactly.
They just took them out. Weird.
Yeah, I would have liked to see, like, even if it was like 30 seconds, you know, like a little bit of it, because it gives it a different touch to the whole thing. Because the hands, you know, like, especially sometimes also magicians, some magicians, they love it, but also some magicians, they're like, oh, it's not manipulation or some stuff. The hands are more like, I don't see it really as magic even. I never saw it that way, but I'm a magic act. So, of course, people think of these categories. And for me, it was more like a picture. Like a picture of a girl with many hands, you know, and these hands are busy or keeping me busy, right? So I don't consider it magic, really. It's more, I almost consider it more as a comedy routine, you know? It's not really comedy even. I don't know how to explain it, but it's not like pure magic for me. It's more like a funny picture. Of course, with some nice moves, but it's more like a picture. The earrings are more magical for me.
Yeah.
But I like to combine these two things.
It's funny that you say that, because you're sprouting arms. Like, that's magical.
Yeah, but you know, for some people, they're like, yeah, where's the magic there? Now she got these arms, or maybe these arms are fake, and that's it. You know, like, for some people think like that. They don't think about the picture, which is funny, you know? I was like, some magicians here in Germany, I know some of them, they're like these hardcore fans of very difficult cardistry and stuff. They don't get this. They just don't get it, which is fine for me. It's totally fine. I don't have a problem with it at all, you know, really not. But just to say, like, it doesn't have always to be pure magic. You can do it, of course, but there's so many different levels or different ways to see magic. And I always like this. I like the combination of strange pictures. And that's what I really love.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense now that you say that and looking at your work. It's like, I see what you're saying. That's cool. So we had a question, which I think is a really cool question. And I'm wondering it myself. So Rob Belchunas, who is a big friend of the podcast and asks a question in every single episode, Rob wants to know, when you have such an iconic act, do you find it difficult to perform other things when people just want to see the one that you're known for?
Yeah, kind of, because it's like a singer, you know, when they had one like big hit charts, number one hit, everybody wants to hear it, right? Like even like 20 years later, people want to hear it. So it's kind of like that. People always come back to that, which is fine. You know, I always see it this way. I'm very grateful for that, for this act and for all the experience I made with it. And I'm not angry if anybody is asking about it, even if I do other stuff now too, because I owe a lot to this act and it's still kind of cool. So for me, it's not a big deal. I found it a bit difficult after to create other acts. First of all, because I was traveling so much that I didn't really have the time the first few years. Honestly, I didn't really have the time. And yes, you can steal some coat hangers from a hotel room, but in the end, you know, you need to be home to really work on it. So there might be some ideas, but then you're interrupted because you have to work, you have to travel. So this was kind of hard to create more stuff in the years after the act was released. And the second thing is, it's always easy to, even for myself, to compare other stuff I do with the hands act or the earrings or whatever. So I think you have to free your mind and just don't think about it too much. Like sometimes I thought too much of it. You know, I was scared would the next act or the next effect would be as good or as successful. But this is just blocking your mind, this kind of thinking. The next one maybe is not that successful, you know. Of course, can happen, you know, but you shouldn't be scared of this because this will just frustrate you and block you. You know, like a lot of friends of mine, they do a lot of acts here in Germany. And even Topaz, my mentor, right? He has a million acts. And he also did in the past years, he started a lot of acts and then maybe didn't finish them because they didn't came out the way he wanted to. And what people only see is the success, of course. So it is important to just keep on creating. I think that's the most important thing. Don't think too much about it, even if it's hard sometimes, you know, what the outcome may be, if it might be successful or not. You know, we're not machines, we're artists. And also singers or songwriters, they write better songs. They write songs that are just mediocre, maybe. That's normal. It's completely normal. The important thing is just not to stop. It's to continue. So yeah, for me, it was difficult sometimes after that. But on the other hand, when I created my, what I also call my fashion act, after my hands act, sometimes it was just difficult, but from other magicians, I got a lot of support too. They say, oh, these ideas are really great. But of course, the difficult thing is, even when I play those two acts, the hands act and the new act, the fashion act and the same variety show, it is hard because the hands act I've been doing a couple of years, I'm used to it. The new one, of course, I don't feel as comfortable, right? Or as secure. So it is always difficult for some other things to follow, but you have to go through it. You know, there's no way to make it easier, I think.
Yeah. So you mentioned the fashion act. Is that another cabaret style act, or is that more of a, does that include Deja Shu?
No, the new fashion act is another cabaret act. It's not a quick change act. It's about clothes, but the clothes are appearing out of my hair, for example. And the kind of like plot, I don't really have a plot act. I never do that. But the plot is more or less, I'm trying on different outfits and throwing them away. So I literally throw the clothes away. And then there's next one coming out of the hair. I hold it onto my body. I'm like, no, I don't like it. Next. So it's a very high speed thing with some more quiet moments inside. So this is also a cabaret act that I've been performing also in cabarets. And it's also my lecture. I perform in my lecture too. Like if I only do the hands act, I would do this in lecture for part of it, not the whole thing. And the other act you mentioned, the shoe act.
Yeah.
My first act. Yeah, shoes.
I love it.
I just did last Friday again. I do it quite often still. It's a parlor act. The first act about the fashion thing I created, also with Topaz, a little mentalism effect, which doesn't look like a mentalism effect really. It's more a mix of stand-up comedy now and magic and mentalism. So it's, I talk a lot about shoes. I tell funny things about shoes and my experience with all kinds of shoes. So it's very girly and very funny. And I also do it in cabarets and for companies too. It works everywhere, basically.
Mm. So I think obviously most everyone knows you for the In Her Hands act. And then you have the fashion act. And I love Deja shoes.
Yeah.
I watched as many possible videos you have online of that act. I love it so much. You also do some close-up. What other stuff do you have in your repertoire that if someone were to be like, oh, I want to book Alana, but not for the In Her Hands act, what else do you have in your repertoire?
Yeah, I do close-up magic. It's not magic for magicians I do when I do close-up. I don't do any card tricks, I have to say. I was never,
yes!
I was, yeah, I don't know. Some people hate me when I say it, but I like to watch card tricks. I've seen a lot. I know how a lot of the stuff works just by watching it a million times and having some basic knowledge. But I never really wanted to learn it. So I really cannot show you a single card trick. I really cannot. It's not a joke. I saw it in the Hulas in the little movie. I really cannot. I just do a lot of other stuff. I love everyday objects. So it might be like magic with a ring or with coins or different kind of with a lipstick. You know, all the, it's not all about fashion in my close-up repertoire. Because honestly, I did it a lot when I started, when I was like 16, 17, 18. I did a lot of close-up magic. And that's where my security and ability to talk to people came from. So it was a very important time for me. So I can just recommend doing close-up magic because it just brings down the wall between you and the spectator. And even if you're on stage later, it helps because you're not scared of the audience. Mm. This is a very important step. But this you can book. If you want to book me, you can book close-up magic, which I do. I don't love to do it anymore. I really prefer the stage since many years now, but I do it. And sometimes it's a great thing to be close to the people. And also if I do a longer show, the hands could be there or not. I do a lot of speaking magic, which would include the shoes for sure. I do some classical things too. If I work for companies, I like to do some mentalism effects, you know, like something with dice and guessing which number is on top. And you know, this kind of stuff that people are really moved by, I feel. So I'm getting a little bit more into this. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to do mentalism only, but I really enjoy to do it. But there's still some classical effects. And I do try to transform them into more feminine, fashionable props. Like, yeah. I don't use ropes. I try to not use ropes as much. I try to use scarves instead. You know, like things that I can wear also so that it looks like more everyday, more normal to the people.
Yeah.
So that's basically it. Yeah.
I love that. I love so much because I'm also a really big fan of organic objects. So I also don't do very much card stuff. And like, I love, I'm sick of it. But I love rubber bands because rubber bands are everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I like them too. Yeah.
Oh, they're so great. But I love so much that you're like, instead of ropes, I'm just going to, what can I wear? Oh, yeah, a scarf. Great. Done. Yeah. Here we go. Boom, boom, boom. Oh.
Yeah. Or a ring. You can have it on your finger, right? So it's.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, or I have lipstick with me. I can do some tricks with lipstick. It's just more, like you say, more organic. Mm-hmm. And I think people also appreciate it. I think they really do. So, yeah, a big yes for organic magic.
Yeah. But it's also, it's organic to the audience, but it's also organic to you. So yeah. I used to open my show with a rope routine to music, but the rope I have is this gold. It's like what you would line a table with. And as soon as I found that, I was like, oh, finally, something that doesn't look like I got it from a freaking magic shop. Thank you, Joanne Fabrics. Yeah, I'm with you. I love that everything you do is so organic to you.
Yeah, that's very important because I feel more comfortable, more at ease. And I think the audience can feel it too, you know, and it's self-explanatory. Like if you have an act back, you know, great effect, but still, what is an act back, right? Like, I mean,
nothing. There are no bags for eggs.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny. I don't want to say anything negative really about it because I know some magicians doing really funny stuff with it. It's perfectly fine. But just for me, I just like to bring out things that don't need explanation. So yeah. I can just jump right into the magic.
Yeah, I'm really with you. I don't care for magic looking props.
Neither.
Which is why all the like anything with a magic wallet is always weird. Because like, that's not a wallet I would carry. What are we doing?
Yeah, they look strange sometimes.
Yeah.
It's true.
I love it. Have you seen, this is so random, but I'm really obsessed with D. Christopher's Peak wallet. And it's called the Razor wallet. I've already talked about it in an episode, but I'm just going to keep talking about it. It comes in black and this crimson red color, but it's super gender neutral. So it actually makes sense when you look at it. You're like, oh yeah, that's a wallet that human would carry. Yeah. I love it. I love props like that, that feel like they actually belong to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like it that more and more people who are bringing out magic and props, that they are thinking of it too. I mean, there's still the classical thing, of course, but I feel like there's more and more people thinking about that. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah. We had another listener question from Gordon Haas. Gordon wants to know, what is a favorite or memorable reaction someone had to your magic? And it could be to an effect, to your whole show, to a routine, or even just a little piece that you do.
Wow. Good question, Gordon. For me, it was really sweet when I performed in France for some festivals for lay people. There was a lot of kids in the audience. And for me, it was very memorable when I started performing for these kind of festivals that a lot of little girls came up to me and said, oh, I want to be a magician. And that was so cute, you know, to see that. And they wouldn't go to the boys, to the male magicians. They just wouldn't go there. It was like they found like a role model or whatever you want to call me, you know, in the sense. So that was very touching. This was a very, very warm moment. Also, when I was performing in India a couple of years ago, it was a very strange reaction there. I did my hands act, and you know the Indian goddess Shiva, who has like a few arms. After the show, when I was just walking through the convention hall, it was like a convention hall, like just walking, getting some food, you know. But, you know, some Indian people tried to touch me. They tried to touch my arms. Which was a bit, I didn't understand it at first. I didn't think of this, you know, and I was like, why are they touching me? You know, it's a bit weird. And then the organizer who was walking next to me said, yeah, because they loved it and they think you're kind of a Shiva goddess, you know, so they want to touch your arms. So this was like, I think the craziest reaction I had. And I mean, they were all friendly, right? It was not bad. It was just very unusual.
Yeah.
So I think these were some very good moments.
Yeah. I love that so much that you're just walking around and people are trying to touch you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Have you ever had, maybe negative isn't the right word here. Have you ever had a reaction to your act where they are like scared of you or think you're some evil witch or something? I have. A lot of magicians have. But you also have, like, I'm just doing rubber band tricks. Yeah. You're sprouting arms.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
No, in a negative way, I don't think so. I mean, like sometimes if there are very young kids, they're very small, I've heard that one or two of them might be scared to see that. But that's basically the only time when I've really heard funny. Something like, you know, irritating.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that they're scared.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a little bit shy, maybe. I don't know.
I love it. That's so cool.
The Books to Read segment is sponsored by a bunch of books. It's the Eli Marks Mystery Series. This week, the featured book is Foundations by Eberhard Reis. So this is Foundations, not the Jason England DVDs, by the way. This is Foundations, the book. Oh my goodness. If you're looking to build any good act or routine, this is the book that you need. So between this and, of course, the Books of Wonder, you will be a changed performer. I read Foundations at a time where I really had no idea how to put together a good show, a good act, nothing. I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know how to accomplish it. Foundations examines music, lighting, stagecraft, storytelling, purpose, and much, much more in order to make an unforgettable act. I'm a huge fan of the German School of Magic, which is, I think, not an official title, but just sort of the various theories that come out of the German magic clubs there and the dedication the German magic clubs have to magic and how much they really care about putting on a good show. I can watch those magicians perform all day. And this book will give you a glimpse into the brilliance of magicians like Topaz and our featured guest, Alana. Highly, highly recommend Foundations by Eberhard Reis. Link is in the show notes. This segment was sponsored by the Eli Marks Mystery Series. Hey, do you like mysteries and do you like magic? Nope. Oh, wait. No. Yes. Then you'll love the Eli Marks Mystery Series. Grab the first book in the series, The Ambitious Card, for just 99 cents. Psychics are being murdered, and magician Eli Marks is the top suspect. His best trick? Not becoming the next victim. Grab your copy of The Ambitious Card at elimarksmysteries.com. That's E-L-I-M-A-R-K-S mysteries.com. And I know I've personally mentioned that I've read about half of this book and that I really enjoy it. Well, I've read about 3/4 of this book. This is how slowly I read. I've now read about 3/4 of the book, and it really is good. It's really ramping up, and I'm enjoying my time within the world of Eli Marks. And I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I'm saying that because I rarely like to read books, and I'm really loving this one. The Let's Make It Vanish segment is brought to you by the LA Collusion. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about a trick that if you know anything about magic, you would have heard of. But it has somehow made its way to still be in our vernacular and our thinking and everything today. And I apologize, I'm just going to say the title of the trick once, and then I'm going to not say it again. And that is chink-a-chink. Oh, God, I feel gross every time I say it. Here's the thing. I realize there's an argument that I have heard over and over again for calling this trick by that title because it references the sound that the coins make as they travel, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. But there's also evidence to show, like, oh, no, maybe that's not why the trick was named that at all. Honestly, to me, it doesn't really matter necessarily the history of the naming of this trick if the name of the trick is so offensive and garbage today. Obviously, this blank a blank, fill in the blank word is a slur. It's a bad slur. Let's just not use that word anymore. Oh my goodness. I don't know why this is still. I teach with other magicians and it's in our curriculum and it's on the handouts with this title. And I have to say to students, like, you're going to get a handout. This is the trick we just learned, but this is the original title and please don't say it. And please, I apologize. Oh my gosh, what do I do? This is awful. So I personally have changed what I call it. And so I'm going to tell you that in a second, but also all of the handouts and videos and things where this title would have been referenced, I just don't use those anymore because it's such a terrible name. So again, no argument on whether or not the history and the naming of this trick meant anything or whether what it actually meant, intent on this is irrelevant because the impact is real. Therefore, I would like to rename this trick as the barehanded matrix, because that's what it is, right? If you know what a matrix is in magic, it's where coins or some sort of object travel from one corner of the table to the other. There have been performances of it all over the internet. You can find them from Fool Us, AGT, etc. But that's the idea, is that one thing travels from corner to corner and back again, etc. And this is just happening without any sort of card. Normally, a matrix in its standard version is done with coins and a card to cover it. And this version of the trick is just with your hands covering the coins. It's actually really beautiful if you do it well and no timing and things. It's a really lovely trick, but let's just not call it that anymore. I'm calling it the barehanded matrix. And that's the end of that. So please join me, won't you, in this fun adventure in not using slurs in our magic trick names. And we're just going to keep going on that adventure. Hope you're still calling it the Torn and Restored Thread. Boom! Changing the world, one old published magic trick at a time. This was brought to you by the LA Collusion, a society of magicians of all backgrounds focused on improving the art of magic through culture, creativity, and communication. Find out more, the link... I wish I knew where the link was. Oh, that's right. It's in the Showy Bowie notes. Enjoy. The Historical Women segment is sponsored by the Penguin Magic Podcast, hosted by Eric Tate. Minerva, Queen of Mystery, was one of the earliest women to perform escapes. And no, this is not Minerva McGonagall. I know what you're thinking. It is Minerva, the Queen of Mystery. Her real name was maybe Margaretha Gertz Van Dorn. It could have also been Margaretha Snelling, but then also Margaretha Vanno, but also maybe not any of those. According to Genie Magazine's online resource, she, not just her magic, was a huge mystery. Talk about the Queen of Mystery. Am I right? But okay, moving on. It's not sure exactly when she started performing. There's really not even a birth date that I can reference, but she was very active in the early 1900s, making her a direct rival with Houdini. She was even more known than him for her version of the milk can escape, but with a barrel of water and heavy shackles, which, as you can imagine, maybe didn't sit so well with our good buddy, Harry. She also performed a duo act with her then-husband and manager, Vanno the Handcuff Expert, and was very famous for her bridge jump, where handcuffed she'd jump off a bridge into the river and attempt to escape. How high was that bridge? She also did this as a publicity stunt for a run in Arlington, Virginia, and jumped into the Potomac. There's talk of when she was in Europe that the Houdini people, I'm not sure exactly what the Houdini people references, just they sound scary though, that the Houdini people put acid in her water barrel and she had to stop the escape not long after it began. She was regularly featured in the Sphinx magazine and lots of newspapers. There still, though, isn't much information on her. Not that I can't find it, but that all the information I would find would say there isn't much on this woman. I'm going to link to the Genie page as well as the Magic Detective website run by Dean Carnegie. For being so well known at the time, it's kind of a bummer that there isn't much recorded and available today. There have been some articles and things found by Dean Carnegie about lawsuits and newspapers and such that are basically all we have to go on now. And normally I mention when this woman died, and in this case I cannot because that information doesn't seem to be available after all of the research I've tried to do. So unfortunately, Minerva, the Queen of Mystery, is truly the Queen of Mystery. This segment is sponsored by the Penguin Magic Podcast, hosted by Eric Tate. Every week, if you listen to the Penguin Magic Podcast, you can get a 25% discount code on the featured download of the week. You can hear stories from your favorite magicians behind the scenes at Penguin and save money on some of the best new magic. So visit podcast.penguinmagic.com to find out more. Huzzah!
We kind of quickly... I could have used it as a transition when talking about props, but now I'm going to go back to it. Yeah. So obviously Shazam, born out of what it was born out of. So my question to you is, what has been your experience in magic? What has that been like because you're a woman? Has it been helpful? Like, what parts were helpful? What parts were more negative that you wish maybe didn't happen? What's that experience been like for you?
Yeah. Well, there's two sides of the coin, right? Being a woman, a female magician, for me was, I would say, more helpful. Being a woman in magic was more helpful because when I started, I mean, still today, there are not that many girls. I mean, there are many girls and there are coming more and more, but compared to the percentage of guys doing magic, it's still a smaller percentage. So when I started, there were even less girls. And for me, it was very helpful because I felt the market and whatever market that was very happy that there was a female doing magic and also doing some, let's say, good magic and not looking also like a stripper, you know, because that can happen too. I've seen some, nothing against strippers, but I've seen some girls, you know, like almost in a bikini, and which can be great, but it looked kind of cheap, you know, and I think I hit a nerve being kind of classy, elegant, but still like a little bit fashionable with a leather jacket. At that time, it was a big thing. So it was a really good experience. And I got a lot of support by fellow magicians. And people really seemed to look for something like that. Also corporate events. It was really good. The negative side was, for example, in Germany, when we had the German Championships of Magic, when I took part in it, the president of the German Magic Circle, when I won, said, oh, I didn't think she could do that, you know, or a woman could
like
do
into,
that.
He said that into a microphone?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't mean it in a very bad way, I think, you know, but of course, somehow it sounds really like, what, you know? But I was not really angry at him, you know? I was just like, it's a bit stupid to say it. But on the other hand, I've proven them wrong. You know, it's okay. It's fine. I'm not a person that, how can I say it, is so angry, like, and talking all the time about, like, oh, we're so underrepresented and we're so, you know, it's so bad for us. To be very honest, I'm not like that because I didn't have that many bad experiences.
Mm.
Of course, if somebody's not booking an act because it's female, I don't like that. You know, of course, I hate that. But I had a lot of good experiences, so, you know. But it has happened a couple of times where people didn't book me because I'm a woman, because I think they said, no, if a woman, I don't know if she can have the same success as a guy. So they were really doubting a little bit. And I don't speak about magicians now. I speak about corporate, more or less. And in the magic world, when I started, it was like, we're doing a festival. And I was saying, oh, can I please perform at your festival? And then the organizer would say, you know, we already have a woman in the show.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, okay, we have categories. We have mentalism, we have manipulation, illusions, general magic, and we have women.
Yeah.
Or women. We have a woman. So this is, of course, stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the guys are also doing different kinds of magic. So do we. I mean, we're all different. So this happened a few times. But it was just a few times, so I didn't feel too offended, to be very honest, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, this can happen, and I'm happy this is changing. Almost a year ago, I was in Sweden, in Lund, which there's a very nice magic convention, and Gail Jungberg really took care that a lot of girls were booked there in the gala show, and we did some kind of like TED Talks there about being a woman in magic, and it was interesting. So I welcome this way of thinking of the organizers, but I didn't have negative experiences. To be very happy about, I'm very happy about many.
Yeah,
I would love to know about yours now because you mentioned it, but I don't know if you want to say it, you know.
Just listen to this podcast. Well, yeah, I mean, I've talked about different facets of it within episodes, so not to go like too deep into it, but of course, I've had fantastic experiences. I'm really lucky that my mentor from the age of 7. He didn't care about me fitting a specific kind of performer. He just wanted me to be good. And if I came to him and said, I want to do this, he'd say, here's how we make it happen. Or if I said, I want to do this, he'd go, well, I'm not sure if that fits you. Try this. And so I was really lucky that he never made me feel, I don't think he ever even mentioned the fact that I was a girl. Like, it wasn't a thing. But then the kids that were in the club were not as accepting. So I very quickly got told, like, I walked in and was told by a teenager to leave. So really? I was like, I'm 7, shut up. And then that was
teenagers, right? It's not even adults.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, really. Super dumb. And then it's just, you know, frustration after frustration. But overall, and I know that I talk a lot about how frustrating it is and elements like we already have a woman booked, or there's always been chatter that women at magic conventions get paid less for the same amount of time. I can't prove it, but that is a thing that women have said. To things, you know, we had a whole episode about sexual assault, and that's a thing that's really rampant here. And so it can be bad. I think, though, there are a lot more hurdles, but once you get over those hurdles, like, I don't see it as much for me. I see it for the younger generations. Mm-hmm. So I'm not so much yelling for my own sake. I'm yelling more for, you know, I mentor two 10-year-old girls who are geniuses and brilliant at magic. And one of them is going to be a magic inventor. She's going to have product within the next 2 years. Right. She's awesome. And we're actually working on something right now that I'm really excited about. But the idea there is I don't want them to experience the stuff I've experienced, but yeah. I haven't experienced stuff that my friends that are older than 45 years yeah. old have experienced.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's getting better. With this podcast, there's been a lot of other conversations opened up. So hopefully magicians are starting to learn this is not the way you treat your assistant, your audience yeah. volunteer, the women around you, and hopefully it's getting better. Yeah. But yeah, I think the positives outweigh the negatives. The problem is that negatives just weigh on you for a long time, even if there is more positives going on.
No, but I think that podcasts like that or anything that, you know, every time you talk about a subject like this is probably helping to spread more awareness. So I think it's a good thing. And I do think it's getting better because, like you said, now it's already better than, I don't know, 40 years ago. So
yeah,
I think it's getting better. But of course, it's really important to talk about these things. Yeah,
it's important to me too. So we've been doing a lot of statistical analysis of magic resources and the representation of women in podcasts, mm-hmm. in product, in television and everything. And I've done the majority of magic podcasts that I can find easily. And the representation of women is so small. And when you look at it and you go, hey, there's only overall 2% of podcast guests are women. Maybe we could boost this up. And I don't even count my own because 75% of my own podcast guests are women. So that's not even going into the overall idea. So, you know, things like that is like, oh, we could add more women. And Penguin has been doing a really good job. They've been adding a lot more women demonstrating product and teaching product. And it's like, yes, thank you, Penguin. Appreciate you. You know, that's great. So
that's great. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. Having conversation is really helpful. And if I have to be the one to yell about it for a while, I'll take that on. That's absolutely fine with me. Yeah. Yay. We can do it. But the idea that you're well, like, you know, I mentioned not everyone wants to answer the question of what it's like to be a woman. I freaking hate that question. I'm over it. I'm done. But when we answer it, it's helpful.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, I've been asked this question for so many years now. It's okay for me. Honestly, I don't bother that much because I think somehow probably it is important to talk about it. Of course, you can see it that way. Like, why should we even talk about it and make a thing out of it, right? It
right.
should be normal, but it is not normal yet. So probably we need this kind of talk still. So
yeah, I wish it could just be, no, just do good work. And that's what you're judged on. Yeah. But still, I'm not well known in magic. I work outside of magic. I don't do magic for magicians.
Yeah.
I don't impress anybody in the magic community.
Oh.
Maybe sometimes, but overall I don't. But I've been performing professionally for a long time and still I walk into a group of magicians and I'm not given the time of day. And you're like, but what? Hello. Hi. Hello. I'm in a touring show. I've been on... Hello, anyone? No. Okay. So even that, it's like, just pulling sometimes.
Understand.
Yeah. But we, you know, we're having the conversation and that's what matters.
Exactly.
Boom. We always end every podcast with the same thing. But before we go into that, is there anything else that you'd like to mention, talk about?
Yeah, I think it's fine.
Yay.
Okay, great.
We talk about so much. It's great. Deja shu. That's my favorite thing. Okay, so we end every podcast with the lightning round. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions. They're very fun. There's no pressure. You can answer as short as you'd like, or you can take a page from Max Maven's book and answer 2 hours per question. So, and that's not a joke. That is an actual thing.
So I try to keep it short.
Great. I mean, do what you want. You'll never hit the amount of time that Max did.
No question, right?
No, these are like a question you answer whatever you want, not yes or no. Yeah. Okay, ready?
Yes.
What is your go-to place to learn either more magic or more something? So like it could be a book or a website or a person.
Okay. It's usually a person. It's usually a magician. So
yeah.
I do read, of course. I watch some videos sometimes, but I usually like to talk to other magicians about how a trick could work or what could I do about this and that. So I like really to talk to experienced people.
Great. Yeah. Topaz.
For example.
I love him so much. Where has been your favorite place to perform?
My favorite place to perform was probably the Magic Castle. Yeah, to be honest, okay. I think it's the greatest audience.
Yes, it is.
I really loved it. But I do love performing in other countries and meeting different cultures. So I just love to see all the different places. But the Magic Castle was really, really a great audience.
Yeah, best audience you'll ever perform for, hands down. Yeah, yeah. That's because they are insane in the best possible way. Yeah. Oh, that place. What's your biggest pet peeve about magicians? What's the biggest thing you hate magicians do?
Ooh. I think sometimes magicians have a special way about them that I don't like. They are very competitive sometimes, very jealous. Not all of them, sure. But I've experienced a more relaxed atmosphere, like in the cabarets, being with, I don't know, jugglers and, you know, other kind of artists. So sometimes the tension that magicians have, I don't like it that much. Yeah, probably that.
Yeah. In terms of fashion, what's something you cannot live without?
I cannot live without many things. I have to name one thing. Oh.
You can name multiple.
Ah, well, for sure, boots. I love to wear boots. I love to wear hoodies. I couldn't, you know, it's maybe not the most fashionable, but I would wear them to everything, you know, like to elegant outfits. I love hoodies. Very important. Yeah, and but shoes would be probably the best answer. Classic girl.
That's okay. So then, going into the next question, how many pairs of shoes do you own?
I really don't know. I didn't count them. A lot.
Is it more than 100?
Probably not more, but maybe around.
Oh yeah. My god.
A little less, probably. No, I don't think it's over 100 now. But I honestly never count them. I don't know.
Not including shoes I own for magic, I own 6 pairs of shoes.
Oh, really? You do? Well, the thing is, you only wear a couple of them, right? I mean, Sometimes you just see them, you're like, oh, they look great. They look great on my shelf, you know?
Yeah.
They look nice. But can I walk in them? No.
No.
No, I can't do that. Yeah. So they're just nice to look at. And sometimes me and my friends, they're, you know, exchanging pairs. We have the same sizes. And then sometimes I'm selling some pairs also over the internet. So on the internet. Yeah. Shoe lover.
That's amazing. I'm very impressed. Big dogs or little dogs?
All dogs. I have a little dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
It's called a Bolonka, which is like a Russian breed, but it's kind of like, you know what, like Maltese dogs are, like this.
Yeah.
She looks kind of like that, but she's black and white. So this kind of size.
Oh my God.
But goodness. I love big dogs too. It's just like, she's more practical. I can take her with me to jobs very easily. So yeah, I love dogs.
I have a big dog. He's the official Shazam mascot. He's snoring right now. But I'll bring him over in a minute. You can see his giant head. If you could only eat one dessert for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I think it would be something with chocolate. Probably this kind of little chocolate cake with a melted chocolate inside. I don't know how you call it in England.
Like a lava cake?
Like a lava cake. A lava cake. Yeah, that's it. I heard about it. Yeah, lava cake. I think it would be lava cake.
Great choice. I'm going to go find some for breakfast. And then can you shout out a woman in magic that maybe not a lot of people know about, but is pretty amazing?
Leah Kyle, the girl that was on Fool Us recently.
Yeah. The quick change. Yeah.
Very nice girl. We worked together like 2 years ago. Well, she didn't perform there. I think she was with her boyfriend who was performing. And she told me at that time she's working on a quick change act. Very nice person. And a very creative act that she created with her boyfriend together. So,
that's so cool. Alana, thank you so much. This was amazing.
Thank you so much, too.
And that's the episode. Don't forget to follow us on the socials at SheZamPod. For all things swag, head over to our website at SheZamPod.com for shirts, pins, and that coveted Don't Touch Me skateboard. You know you need it. If you are interested in the bonus content for this episode and future episodes, plus exclusive swag designs, behind-the-scenes content, and shout-outs in episodes, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/SheZamPod. Links to everything are in our show notes. You can also sponsor one of our many segments this season. I still have some spots left, so please email me at shezampod@gmail.com if you'd like to find out more. Shazam is sponsored in part by the International Brotherhood of Magicians and the Society of American Magicians. Thank you to the IBM and the SAM for your support. Our audio producer is Chris Combs. The Shazam theme song is recorded and produced by Kevin Karikas with vocals by Jonah Fagel. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you soon. Bye.